I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, the 2024 election cycle is about to get a lot more exciting and more expensive. Plus, an early poll looks promising for Republican gubernatorial candidate Dave Reichert, but the timing is awful suspicious. Also, California to teach kids media literacy, and a libertarian wins in Argentina. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support the show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Today is a good day. Today is a damn good day for working class Washingtonians. And you know what? We need a little good news. We deserve a little bit of good news. Over the weekend, we found out that a very important initiative has reached the necessary signature threshold to be turned in. We've been talking about this one a lot in collection with some other initiatives that are going on at the same time. And I've said, to me, for people who dissent from the prevailing political and ideological worldview in Washington state, for people who desperately want a change of course and feel like time and time again their vote is not making a difference, the initiative process and the referendum process are critical because that is the opportunity to undo some of the damage that has been done. So we told you Let's Go Washington has been running now for months, a set of six initiatives. And over the weekend, they announced that they were going to turn in signatures for one of those initiatives. Now, I'm not a genius per se, but they said that they're going to make the announcement at a gas station. So that leads me to believe that the initiative that they're going to be turning in tomorrow is Initiative 2117. 2117. And what would it do? It would get rid of that pesky cap and trade program, the hidden gas tax, the carbon tax, that is directly responsible for Washington state over the summer hitting the unfortunate historic thing of being the highest gas prices in the nation for the first time ever. It has raised gas prices something like 50 cents per gallon. And we knew all along that it would. You know, Governor Jay Inslee, this was his thing that he was pushing, that he was advocating for over and over and over again. We've got to save the environment. He denied, as it was being debated, that the carbon tax would increase prices at the pump. He didn't just deny it. He lied about it. He knew it would. The program is designed to increase gas prices. And then when it took effect in the first of this year, we saw it almost immediately. It was within weeks that we saw the impact that the carbon tax, the cap and trade program, would have for working class people at the gas pump. And so there was this effort underway from Let's Go Washington to put Initiative 2117 together, to get it out there in the community. And it doesn't surprise me that this is the first one in their suite of initiatives that they have enough signatures for, because, and they put six of them together that are all common sense. I mean, restore reasonable police pursuits is one of them, no income tax, getting rid of the illegal tax on capital gains, making the long-term care tax optional, one that restores rights to parents when it comes to knowing what the heck their kids are doing. But it doesn't surprise me that in particular, Initiative 2117 is the first one to reach the necessary signature threshold to be able to turn in to the Secretary of State's office. Now, a couple things about what's going to happen from here. And again, the announcement, the official announcement is going to come tomorrow. They're going to turn the signatures in tomorrow. And then what will happen is the Secretary of State's office will make sure that there are enough valid signatures. Whenever you turn initiatives in, you get a little bit of a buffer space in there, right? To account for people who might not be registered voters, who might have signed twice, who might have, you know, just tried to troll them and put some fake name in there and signed it, for instance. And then from there, this one's interesting because this is an initiative to the legislature. All of these are. So what that means is when the legislative session begins at the start of the year, the legislature, run by Democrats, can either just ignore this and say, we really don't care what 400,000 or so Washingtonians have to say. We really don't care that they're drowning in the high cost of gasoline. We're just going to ignore this. And if that's the case, then it goes to voters in 2024. And this time next year, you would be able to vote on whether you want to eliminate the carbon tax. And I got to say, based on experience and how these sorts of things usually do statewide, this will pass. This will pass in 2024 if it goes to voters, undoubtedly, because selling people on lowering the cost of gas is a very easy sell to make. It's not popular. And so it puts Democrats in a really difficult, interesting position in 2024, because if they ignore it, it's going to pass at the ballot box. Voters are going to pass it. The legislature could decide, okay, we want to respect what these voters want. We understand that the cost of gas is crushing people, so we're going to enact it. That's highly unlikely. Democrats will absolutely never do that. Or they could find a workaround and craft their own sort of competing version of the initiative, and then they would both go to the ballot. But one of the reasons this is interesting is it makes 2024 a hell of a lot more interesting as an election cycle and a lot more expensive. And you could look at this a couple ways. So let's say that not only 2117 qualifies, but you have restoring reasonable police pursuits, you have making the long-term care tax optional, the initiative against an income tax, the initiative to do away with the unlawful capital gains tax, the initiative to restore parental rights. Let's say you've got all of that, where there were enough signatures collected and the legislature is faced with, what do we do with all of these? I mean, things that will undo some things that Democrats were so, so proud of. So if they ignore all of that, you have to wonder, how does that look for the Democratic Party when it comes to some of the big races on the ballot in 2024? The gubernatorial race, which we'll talk about coming up in the next segment, for Bob Ferguson. Will the media put Bob Ferguson on the record while he's running for governor about, hey, what do you think about reducing the price at the pump and this initiative? What do you think about making the long-term care tax optional? What do you think about restoring reasonable police pursuits? So not only does it put Bob Ferguson and other Democrats running for office in a prickly situation to have to take a stance, because they will, against what are very, very popular initiatives in Washington state that will pass overwhelmingly on the ballot, I'm sure of it. But also, this is going to be a huge money suck for Democrats and political action committees who are going to spend a fortune fighting against these. They're going to spend a freaking fortune, millions of dollars, trying to make sure that you can't get lower prices at the pump. And so that sucks out of the larger pool of money that some of these Democratic candidates could expect to get, because you're going to have union groups, et cetera, who will fight tooth and nail with every freaking dollar they have to keep these taxes coming out of your pocketbook. And that's going to tick off, I think, a lot of Washington voters. So and that's why I say this is a damn good day for working class Washingtonians, because you are going to have a say next year one way or the other on some of these laws that have been crippling you, absolutely crippling you financially. And this is going to have a direct impact on the outcome of some of the key races in this state. I am sure of it. So be happy today that this is going to happen tomorrow. We'll be discussing it on the show tomorrow. Brian Haywood, who's in charge of letsgowa.com and this entire initiative effort, is going to be joining us to talk about where things go from here. So we'll have that for you tomorrow. I will also say, though, speaking of 2024, there was an interesting poll out over the weekend that initially I'm like, oh, good for Dave Ryker. And then I was like, the skeptic in me was sort of like, this timing is so suspicious. So this is from the Northwest Progressive Institute. There was some polling done, and I'll get to sort of how the poll was conducted, et cetera, because that matters. But the big takeaway that everybody was sharing on social media is that the Northwest Progressive Institute says, based on a poll of 700 likely voters, Dave Ryker in a head-to-head with Bob Ferguson is 2% ahead, 46% to 44%. And that doesn't surprise me per se, because Dave Ryker has some really tremendous name recognition. And frankly, Bob Ferguson is getting less and less popular among Democratic voters by the day. And I'll say 700 likely, so the poll was, just so you understand who took it. Northwest Progressive Institute polled 700 likely 2024 Washington state voters. They were surveyed between November 14th and the 15th by Public Polling Policy. 58% participated by text, 42% by landline. They say their margin of error is plus or minus 3.7%. So Bob Ferguson's within the margin of error. So essentially in a head-to-head right now, they'd be neck and neck. I'll show you quickly the larger poll results, because of course there's more than just two candidates in the race for governor right now. So if when the poll included all of the current top four candidates, it had Dave Ryker and Bob Ferguson head-to-head at 31%, Semi Burt, a Republican, at 10%, and Senator Mark Mullett, a moderate Democrat, at 5%. So when this came out, you know, I think there were a lot of people who are very supportive of Dave Ryker, who were sharing it and being like, let's go. And I was one of them. Like, this is going to be, and I don't think we needed this poll to tell us that this is going to be probably the best chance that Republicans have had in a very long time of clinching the governor's office, something that hasn't been done in this state for 40 years. You know, a lot of the political issues, taxation, some of the social issues, besides abortion, which we'll get to momentarily, are really on Dave Reichert's side in sort of the current political climate and the direction of things coming out of 12 years of Governor Jay Inslee. Bob Ferguson is just Governor Jay Inslee 2.0. So there's a lot of factors, I think, that make this a very advantageous time for Dave Reichert. So I was like, ah, good for him. But then I was like, ah, the skeptic in me. And I was talking to some folks about this particular polling entity, the Northwest Progressive Institute. And I was reminded that it was released at a very strategic time. So obviously the Northwest Progressive Institute is a biased institution. They want progressives to be elected. The thing is that the poll was released just before a legislative fundraising freeze. So keep in mind, in Washington state, for a month prior to the legislative session and during the legislative session, you cannot, as a legislator and a current elected official, you cannot fundraise. You can't be out there campaigning and fundraising. And so that is certainly going to put Bob Ferguson at a disadvantage to Dave Reichert, who is not going to be bound by that legislative freeze. So you get this poll that comes out showing, oh, this is a tight race coming up in 2024, released by the Northwest Progressive Institute right before Bob Ferguson has to cease fundraising efforts for the legislative session. That's skeptical. That's critical. And then you saw, like clockwork, how this was all orchestrated and timed out. Bob Ferguson, the Washington State Democratic Party, they go to social media and they put out these desperate pleas. Bob Ferguson, in the last two open seat gubernatorial races in Washington, the average margin was just 1.5%. We've always known our race against Dave Reichert would be close. Chip in to help us keep anti-choice Dave Reichert out of Olympia. The Washington Democrats, even more desperate. Dave Reichert, an anti-abortion extreme Republican, is leading over Democratic champion Bob Ferguson. You gotta love that sentence. We cannot afford to lose this governor's seat to someone with such dangerous and extreme values. And then in the next tweet, they asked for money. So look, I'm not saying that the poll results were manufactured. I'm not saying that it's a fake poll or that it's not reliable. The Northwest Progressive Institute, when it releases polling, has been fairly reliable in the past. But that does not mean that the timing of the release wasn't orchestrated so that Bob Ferguson and the Democrats could fearmonger for money. Fearmonger for money, because apparently that's the only way that they can get people to donate is if they try to scare the hell out of you. And you'll note, you know, when the Washington Democrats say an anti-abortion extreme Republican, they just think all Republicans are extreme. If you're going to call Dave Reichert an extreme Republican, the state Democratic Party just believes that if you are a Republican, if you're a conservative, you are an extremist. And they should just say as much, because they paint every single Republican as an extremist. This is a fear-mongering technique and tactic that unfortunately has worked a lot for them in the past. It's their favorite tactic. Ever since Donald Trump came on the political scene, let's just tie everyone to Donald Trump, even though Dave Reichert has never been a particular fan of Donald Trump. It doesn't matter. And this whole anti-abortion, when the Democrats say he's an anti-abortion extremist, Bob Ferguson says he's an anti-choice candidate. Here's the thing. Dave Reichert's personal opinion is that he's pro-life. That is true. But he came out at the very onset of this campaign and said that he would never, as the governor, take action to unwind, roll back what Washington voters have put in place in our state when it comes to access to abortion. Washington voters decided decades ago what they wanted our abortion access to be in this state. And he said, in some crazy universe, if there were Republican control of the House, Republican control of the Senate, he were a Republican in the governor's office, and if some crazy universe, Republicans wanted to spend that time and that majority sending up some sort of restriction to abortion to his desk, that he wouldn't sign it, that he would send it to voters. So he has been very clear that if the issue of abortion were ever to come up in his time as governor, which is very, very unlikely, because again, there would have to be a solid Republican majority in the House and the Senate, that he would send it to voters to make a decision on, because it is voters decades ago who decided what our abortion law would be. So it's contingent on Dave Reichert to continue to get that out there. But I think it also shows for Democrats, that's all they have. That is all they have. The only trick they have is to scare people into voting for their candidates. Isn't that sad? Isn't that sad? That's the only thing. Bob Ferguson has been in a public office all this time. And instead of lauding and trying to get people to donate to his campaign based on his credentials and based on policies he's pushed that you think are great and will encourage people to donate to his campaign, the only way you can get people to give him money is by lying about his opponent and painting his opponent as an extremist on an issue that isn't even relevant? That's really sad. You kind of have to feel bad for them. Now, the key is, and I don't care who you want to win, by the way. I don't care if you're a big Bob Ferguson fan. I don't care if you're a Mark Mullett fan, Sammy Bird fan, Dave Riker, whatever it is. It really doesn't matter to me. Your vote is your vote. But I think we should all want to be in a place where especially our chosen candidates, especially our chosen political party, isn't trying to scare us for money. I've never understood that with, you know, the low, low bar we set for the people we vote for. The low, low bar we set for the parties we support. You're supporting them. You like them. Why do you have a lower bar for their conduct and their behavior than you do the other party? That doesn't make any sense. Clearly, you don't think much of the other person if you're not voting for them. So I feel like it should bother every single voter in Washington when, especially in these economic times, you have political parties and candidates who are using fear, who are trying to instill fear in people as a way to get their money. I have yet to see Dave Riker at one time ask for fundraise off fear-mongering. And he shouldn't have to. He doesn't have to. He has a strong record. He's the right candidate for the right time. I've said that he is my choice for 2024. And I would be disappointed if I saw Dave Riker out there fundraising like this, fundraising off fear. So shame on the state Democratic Party, although this is not a surprise, but I think we have to, as soon as the anti-abortion, extreme Republican, MAGA, whatever shtick that they run, as soon as that wears off, they have nothing left. They have to talk about their failed policies on public safety. They have to talk about their overtaxation to the point where they're bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue that they are then paying people to study how to spend. If you have to study how to spend tax revenue, you probably don't need the tax revenue. So the last thing Democrats want to do is have to actually debate based on the merits of their ideas and their policies. God forbid, because I don't think that will end well for them. Anyway, I made this poll. We did our daily subscriber poll about a poll. Daily subscriber poll about a poll in our daily show poll for undivided subscribers on Patreon and Locals. So the question was based around this poll from the Northwest Progressive Institute showing that Dave Riker is beating Democrat Bob Ferguson in a head-to-head matchup. I asked, which statement best characterizes your view of the poll results? A, the poll is very good for Dave Riker. B, it is too early to mean much. Or C, I don't trust the source, because again, it is the Northwest Progressive Institute. So you might look at that and say, that's not very trustworthy to me. So right now, most of you are saying on Patreon Locals that it's just too early to mean much, although the other options were split as well. Diana said, although I'm delighted with the results, we still have a long way to go. Bill says, it is likely a lie to motivate more Dems to vote. The middle word of the source should give you all you need to know, progressive. And I don't know if it's a lie to motivate more Dems to vote as much as it is at this stage a lie to motivate more Dems to donate money. Daniel, many people have discounted this poll, yet if you look at their predictions over time, they were on the money in the 2020 governor, 2022 U.S. Senate, and 2023 Seattle City Council District 3 races. That's good to know. So Daniel's saying that they do have a pretty good track record of their polls being fairly accurate. Rich says, too early to tell. Dems, a Democratic method to fire up their base. We sure need Dave to win this. I sure hope he has a strong year campaigning and pulling this off. I could not agree more. And it is nice to see, again, name recognition does go a long way, as long as your name recognition is positive, right? And Dave Riekert comes into the race with not very much baggage. You know, he got out of Congress before the impeachment vote, so he never had to go on the record on either of those things. He also got out of Congress, and one of the stated reasons was he was really, really sick of the state of political discourse and politics in D.C., so he was able sort of to separate himself from that. So I should also note, we have a special guest today. I feel like this is a good time to say hello to our special guest, Daryl Davis.
Hello, how's it going?
Hi, friend. So Nicole's gallivanting in Costa Rica. Why does she go on way more vacations than me?
Me too. You know what? God bless her.
God bless her. I mean, she's out in Costa Rica. Apparently, she had a pretty wild flight situation.
That's going to be our unbelievable segment when she gets back.
She said she's reserving unbelievable for her when she gets back because I don't know what happened, but after the show last Thursday, she immediately left for the airport. So she left like 1:45 or something. She texts me at like 11 p.m. from Las Vegas saying that she was in Las Vegas. She was going to leave her cousin and their kids like in L.A. and go to – so it was a whole disaster.
She texted me kind of stressed out trying to tell me things about the show. And I'm like, Nicole, I built this system. You're good. Enjoy your vacation.
Except you've got to – you got to sit up, good posture, a little closer to the microphone.
Okay.
Good. There you go.
All right.
All the tech you've got.
Yeah.
You know?
I just don't know how to use it, really.
You do.
I know how to use it. I know how to set it up, but I hope this is nice and clear and loud for everyone.
Yes. Well, I'm happy that you're here. Do you look too much into political polling this early?
I really don't.
No.
Only because, I don't want to look too much into it, but if I were on the other side and I see that it's this close, I would probably try to energize my constituents.
So you don't really blame them?
I don't blame them.
For the fear-mongering, though? Can't you energize them based on, like, hey, look at these things Bob Ferguson has done, you know? Support him.
Like what?
Ignoring the retail theft crisis until it was politically palatable. Ignoring the crime crisis until it was politically palatable. I don't know. Using his power of his office to disenfranchise voters. Yeah. I mean, what else? You know, all those things.
The way things are going. Yeah. Let's just keep it going.
You live in Bellingham, so you might have to be our guy on the street to tap into the pulse of progressives and see, you know, what's going on.
We did have someone in my neighborhood. Their house actually did get broken into as they were going out to walk their dog because, in Bellingham,
Who do they blame?
Used to leave doors unlocked. They don't blame anyone. It's just unfortunate.
Unfortunate, yeah. So nothing's contributing to that. All right, Daryl, thank you for being here. We'll see you in comments. We had an interesting episode of Sundays with Subscribers yesterday. You know, I always like to pimp the Sunday show when I can. Can I say pimp the Sunday show? Is that okay? Is that not politically correct?
Let's not pimp the Sunday show.
Okay. I always like to promote.
Yeah.
Promote the Sunday show.
Because if you pimp it, then it makes money and... Yeah, well, you get all the money. So I guess you are pimping it.
Yeah, I am pimping it. Pimping our content. Anyway, the last couple weeks have been really bad for Washington's climate governor, Jay Inslee. And I got to imagine that these stories that have come out just hurt him right in the heart because he has propped himself up as the climate governor. He's traveling around the world, speaking at all these climate symposiums. I mean, he ran for president as the climate candidate. And then it was a 1-2 punch. So King 5 investigators, not just any King 5 story, the King 5 investigators came out with a story, Washington is missing key climate goals, advocates claim. And it was from Susanna Frame. And Susanna Frame went into all these goals that Governor Jay Inslee has set, and then in all the ways that he's failed. Washington State is recycling less than it was. Carbon emissions are up. Greenhouse gas emissions from transportation specifically are up, not down. So a lot of failures. So the King 5 story happened. Simultaneously, it got a little less attention, but there was also a government watchdog entity that was looking into the decline in salmon populations. And the U.S. Government Accountability Office, which is sort of a watchdog of Congress, came out and they released a report talking about the decline in salmon populations in Washington State and putting a lot of the blame on water quality, the Department of Ecology, Governor Jay Inslee's administration. And at the same time, you know, Inslee has been so focused on breaching the Snake River dams, and we need to do that, which would hurt a lot of people in eastern Washington. But he hasn't seemed very concerned with taking seriously the water quality issues that are threatening salmon and killing salmon. So on Sundays with Subscribers, we just couldn't help ourselves but to really highlight some of these environmental failures from the Inslee administration. We had on two guests. I just want to play a clip for those of you who didn't catch the Sunday show. Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center has just been a go-to on environmental issues. He's the first person who came out and said, hey, the carbon tax that the governor's pushing through is going to raise gas prices. He was screaming it from the rooftops. Nobody listened to him. And then what happened? Bam. He was spot on, one penny off as to what the increase would be. And he is also the reason that Susanna Frame with the King 5 investigators did her investigation, because he reached out to her and said, hey, the governor's not making all of these benchmarks. So he joined us on the Sunday show to talk about it.
If you truly care about the environment, you want to get the most bang for our buck. You want to achieve these things. You want salmon to recover. You want to reduce CO2 emissions. You want to make our forests healthy. And if we're not doing that, we need to change direction. And what the reaction of the governor has been repeatedly is to whitewash his own failure. In 2019, he took all the data down showing that he was failing in the King 5 story. Susanna Frame tried to get an interview with him, even walked up to him and said, let's do an interview. And he ducked the interview. So his reaction every time, we don't make the environment better, make it more healthy, more robust, protect wildlife, is to play politics and duck. And I just think from a basic standpoint, if you care about the environment, that should infuriate.
Yeah, and that should be non-controversial. If you're someone in a position like Governor Jay Inslee, who's made climate this key issue for you, it's not enough just to say you care about the environment while simultaneously not doing anything to make it better. To me, that's almost worse, is you're putting on this fake facade. And then not only, and I think it would be different if he set these goals, you know, lofty goals. And then he came back and said, look, we're not meeting these goals. We need to do change this, change that to meet these goals we've set because they're very important. But he's not doing that. Remember in the King 5 report, they had this government website that was supposed to track all these goals that had scrubbed certain data so that, you know, it wasn't as obvious when the state wasn't meeting them. Susanna Frame was trying repeatedly to get the governor to sit down and talk about it. And the office was basically like, we don't have enough time. Of course they have time. So he's not being accountable to his own goals. And that to me should really be a problem, particularly for people who care about the environment, particularly for people who have believed in him because of his focus on climate change. Our second guest on Sundays with Subscribers was Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rodgers, a Washington Republican. And she's actually the one who commissioned the study from the Government Accountability Office, in part because, you know, she represents a big swath in eastern Washington. She has constituents who would be seriously impacted if the Snake River dams are breached to protect salmon. And she wanted to see, are there other things the governor is ignoring in favor of focusing on this singular issue?
There's no silver bullet as such to recovering salmon in our region. And yet the governor has been laser focused on the Snake River dams. It's like it's easier to point at something in eastern Washington where he has put a ton of energy and then failed to really look in his own backyard in Puget Sound. And we know there's hundreds of thousands of tires in Puget Sound that are decaying, and the chemicals from those tires is also impacting the water quality. We know that they're finding salmon now that have needles and other pharmaceutical drugs in them. And this is all of this, what is contributing, it basically suffocates the salmon and impacts the salmon runs and ultimately impacts the orcas. So is my point is that there's not a silver bullet that we need to be looking at everything that's impacting salmon runs. And that includes habitat restoration. It includes the predation at the Columbia River, the mouth of the Columbia River, where we've had, you know, the sea lion population increase from hundreds to now thousands. And also what's going on in the ocean conditions. There's this idea that we breached the dams and we solved the salmon runs. It's just not true.
Yeah, it's not true. If you want to catch both those interviews from Sundays with Subscribers, you can sign up on DividedPod.com. On DividedPod.com, we do an exclusive Sunday show just for subscribers every single week. So if you care about environmental issues, I think both of those guests, you know, it's a nuanced issue. And I, as the Congresswoman McMorris Rodgers said, there isn't a silver bullet to say, oh, you know, the water quality is the one thing. If Inslee would only focus on that, and then all the salmon are saved, we have no issues, and the orcas, yay. No, but when you singularly focus on something happening in eastern Washington, that would be incredibly detrimental to folks out there who need the Snake River dams and earn a living doing that, then that comes across as political and not looking at this holistically based on what are the goals that we want to see. I'll also say, I just want to correct one thing that was said on the Sunday show. Congresswoman McMorris Rodgers said that the Department of Ecology was giving permits in the city of Seattle to the city of Seattle to dump a bunch of raw sewage in Puget Sound. So I think she was conflating two things. So the sewage that the Department of Ecology is giving permits for is treated in wastewater facilities. There have been other instances of runoff and spillage that have been problematic. So there absolutely have been instances of raw, untreated sewage being dumped into Puget Sound. But we are talking about sewage that has been treated in water treatment facilities. However, there have still been concerns raised about that process and whether it is good enough or whether it's continuing to hurt salmon negatively. So anyway, check those interviews out, undividedpod.com. Okay, coming up next, Seattle has now tied its all-time record for homicides. It is sure to beat it before the end of the year. But first, I had this interesting conversation with my mom. I gotta say this before I get into this tease. So I'm on the phone with my mom on Thursday after the show, and I was like, "Oh, hey, mom." She's like, "I'm like, what are you doing?" And she's like, "Oh, I just got done with your friend Zach's webinar." And I go, "What?" So my mom in Minnesota, she listens to the show, and she signed up for Zach Abraham's live webinar on Thursday because she just retired 2 years ago, and now she's trying to figure out what to do with her retirement, how to protect her portfolio against risk, which is what Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in. So yeah, I was teasing his live webinar he had this past Thursday. My mom in Minnesota signed up for his live webinar. So as we've been saying, the economy right now is not in a good position, and so there's a lot of concerns about what that might mean in the coming year. Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, they specialize in managing risk and protecting retirement portfolios against loss.
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, you know, we know, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly, right? Now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows, right? But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also, when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything, right?
Yeah. And so you have to do that actively. It's not enough just to sort of sit and wait and like, oh, I hope, you know, it's not too bad on me when the economy crashes. You've worked hard. You have saved for retirement. The last thing you want to do is put it at risk. So next time there's a live webinar, you can be like my mother and you should definitely join the live webinar and hear what Zach has to say. But in the meantime, check out his radio show at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. You can get some wonderful advice and some perspective on what's happening in this economy. And you can reach out to his team at Bulwark Capital. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right, we knew that this was coming, and this is not certainly going to be the end of it, but over the weekend, Seattle tied its all-time murder rate. Again, not a surprise. We knew, I think, midsummer that it was heading toward unfortunate historic levels. KUOW, their story, Seattle ties record for homicides set in the 1990s. It says, Seattle set a record in 1994 with 69 homicides. That is the current number of homicides the city has recorded for 2023, with still a month and a half left in the year. Goes on to say, the increase in homicides and violent crime is not limited to Seattle. From 2019 to 2022, Washington State saw a 96% rise in homicides. Let that sink in. 96% rise in homicides. In 2022 alone, there was a statewide 8.9% increase in violent crime. Seattle hit a 15-year high in violent crimes, including homicide, rape, robbery, assault in 2022. That same year, homicides rose by 24% over the previous year. And so, of course, you know, this is going to be, unfortunately, by the time we get to the end of the year, and actually, in the last 3 days since that, I should have looked to see if there was another possible homicide or not, but I don't believe that there was. Unfortunately, this is going to be, 2023 is going to be a record year for homicides in the city of Seattle. And this is the natural result of the policies. This is the natural result of what the political class in Seattle and Washington State, what one party rule has done. I mean, the vilification of police that has led to a mass exodus. We have the lowest number of police officers per capita in the country and shrinking. I mean, you look at Seattle, down 600 officers. They don't dare proactively police anymore because if they happen to have to use force, then they're going to be politically persecuted for it. And then you look at some of the pro-criminal policies that have not only been pushed in Seattle, but have been pushed down Olympia. I mean, gosh, crazy policies like trying to reduce the punishment for drive-by shooters who kill someone. Crazy policies like making it nearly impossible for police to pursue even violent criminals. And that kind of stuff has an impact. the lawless environment that it creates, it has an impact. And it is increasingly hard for me to understand why there are still voters who are prioritizing issues like abortion when they choose who to support over issues like public safety. It just doesn't make any sense for me. You know, I'm pro-choice. I've said that a million times. But at the same time, I know that the abortion issue in Washington state is just sort of a moot point. But you know what's not? Record homicide rates. You know, violent crime going through the roof. And this is impacting us in our everyday lives. And it doesn't just have to be violent crime. It doesn't just have to be homicides. We look at the substance abuse crisis and Democrats who want a hands-off approach to substance abuse. And they don't care or understand or care to understand the tie that has to crime and some of the property crimes that are not only impacting homeowners, but businesses. It's insane to me that this isn't priority number one. That it is not priority number one of voters and of lawmakers. I shudder to think some of the crazy ideas, the pro-crime ideas, the pro-criminal ideas that are going to be introduced this legislative session in Olympia. I mean, can it get worse? Can it possibly get worse? And you have one party that feels emboldened to keep pushing these things forward. Oh, you know, record homicides in Seattle, no big deal. It must be because of racism or something like that. So let's try to, you know, let's push more equity initiatives forward and continue to dump on the police. And then I wonder, you know, who do Democrats think they're serving, right? Who do they think they're helping by some of the pro-crime policies? And there was a story that came up out of Tacoma that just breaks my freaking heart. So this is from King 5 News, the headline, Hilltop Heritage Students Voice Safety Concerns Following Lockdowns Prompted by Kia Boys. So this all has to do with a middle school in the Hilltop neighborhood of Tacoma, which historically has had a lot of crime issues. And we've talked about on the show for a long time how the vehicle thefts of Kias and Hyundais are through the roof because some TikToker showed you how to steal them. And then you have criminals, mostly young men, who are taking advantage of that. And so the car theft rates are through the roof. And then you combine that with the state lawmakers who said, oh, cops can't chase people in stolen vehicles. It's just a property crime. And so then they just, you know, drive off scot-free. I'm going to set this up. I'm going to play a little clip of the King 5 story. So you've got this very diverse when it comes to the student population at this middle school in Tacoma. And there are these gang of boys, they're calling the Kia Boys, that are repeatedly joyriding around the school in stolen Kias. And in this one instance, they brandished a firearm and pointed it at a security officer. Here's part of the story from King 5.
Police say a group referred to as the Kia Boys showed up to the school driving recklessly, and when asked to leave by a school patrol officer, the Kia Boys pointed a gun at the officer multiple times and threatened to shoot them.
We are scared to go to school because we don't want to get shot.
Akila says she has experienced around 9 lockdowns at her school this year due to the Kia Boys.
I just want more security, more police officers here.
Think about that for a second. How often do you hear Democrats talk about school security under the umbrella of school shootings, right? You know, mass shootings that happen. I'm not saying that doesn't happen in this country, but in the grand scheme of things, it is very rare. It's still horrible when it happens. It's still awful. It's still something that we need to try to prevent, but it is fairly rare. And when you look at some of the instances of the safety concerns that have been happening around schools that we've talked about on the show lately, you don't hear Democrats speaking out about those safety issues. So for instance, there are a couple schools, high schools in the Seattle area where students walking to and from school are being robbed at gunpoint. Crickets. Absolutely crickets from Democrats who every single time there's a mass shooting in a school, they talk about gun control and, you know, use that as an opportunity to push a political agenda. And then you have young black kids who are telling this King 5 reporter, I'm scared to come to school because I think I'm going to get shot. Talking about these juveniles who are joyriding in a stolen vehicle with a gun. And the young black female at the end saying, I want more police officers around. How does that fit into the narrative in places like Olympia? We just talked about how there was a anti-cop, anti-school resource officer rally in Olympia. Olympia voters just reelected two incumbents to the school board who are not in support of school resource officers, and a third brand new school board member who also thinks school resource officers are racist. So here in Olympia, you have this white brand new member of the school board, this woke white woman who's like, school resource officers are racist. And then I watched this story of this young black middle schooler in Tacoma saying, I'd like more officers around so I feel safe at school. Whose voice should we be listening to? Whose voice should we be listening to in that debate? Should we be listening to the white, woke, new school board member in Olympia who says that school resource officers are built on the grew from the seeds of racism and that they shouldn't be anywhere in our schools? Or should we listen to the, what, 13-year-old young black woman who says, I don't feel safe at school and I would like more police officers around? And when you talk about that, when you hear from those kids who do not feel safe and they're telling you what would make them feel safe, why don't you hear as many Democratic lawmakers speak out about that? Speak out in favor of protecting those kids, because it doesn't fit their political agenda. Protecting those kids would mean putting more officers in schools, and it would mean cracking down on some of these juveniles who have blatant disregard for the rule of law. It would mean, yes, in some instances, putting them in jail. And Democrats can't have that. You know what they can have? Gun control. Gun control. This is a gun issue. Inanimate object. Nothing to do with the absolute degradation of respect for the rule of law among young people, because there are no consequences for them. Absolutely nothing to do with the fact that all these school districts in 2020, to appear, you know, ideologically consistent with whatever the party was saying, were like, oh, pull those cops out of school. That'll make kids feel much safer. Stupid stuff. It really is. And you wonder why we're in this situation. When you pick and choose what safety issues you care about. Oh, mass shooting with an AR-15? Emergency. We've got to erode constitutional rights. Young juveniles whipping around a pistol, driving around a middle school. Oh, that's fine. Let's just ignore that one. Totally morally inconsistent. And we see right through you. Ridiculous. All right, before we get to national news, given the state of the economy, I understand if there are folks who are hesitant to put their home on the market. You know, I've been hearing from some folks who are contemplating moving out of state, and they maybe have a little leeway when it comes to when they have to sell their home. Some people don't, like you're moving and you got to sell it now. But our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, one of the really good tools that they offer is a market analysis for you to reach out to him. He comes back, he does a market analysis to tell you if your home is well positioned to hit the market in this economy. He also said home prices have still been going up a little bit, and so that's good news. But one of the other things that he offers that I haven't seen elsewhere is the Listing Boost Concierge Service. And what that means is that if you need some fixes to your home, you need some updates before it hits the market, so you make sure you get top dollar for it, his team can not only help manage those projects, they can help pay for you up front, and there's not a lot they can't do.
There is a certain dollar amount that I can go to. Mm. If there is something that is bigger than that, we do have some other resources that are available that we can tie into, kind of like a line of credit. But there hasn't been anything that we have not been able to handle yet. And if you guys have questions, you know, let me know. And if you've got a project, you're like, gosh, can this guy handle or not? Just fire it over. I'd love to have that conversation and have somebody stump me with something.
Reach out to Wes Jones, ask him for that free market analysis. And then while you're having a conversation, if there are updates that you need to have to your home, talk through that process and ask him about the Listing Boost Concierge Service. Use their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, dipping outside of Washington State and beyond the United States, down to Argentina, some blockbuster results in the Argentina presidential election. A man named Javier Milei has won that election. And I think when you look at how this race is framed in the U.S. media, this is the Washington Post headline, Argentina set for sharp right turn as Trump-like radical wins presidency. Whenever I see a headline like that, I'm just intrigued. It doesn't even turn me off to the guy. Because whenever the media in the U.S. is vilifying you that much, you know there must be something to it. And we'll revisit that Washington Post headline in a minute, because I think it's just really, really telling. But One of the reasons why Javier Milei has gotten so much attention in this race is not only because he's a huge departure from the direction that Argentina has been heading, but Tucker Carlson, when he launched his own show on X, he traveled to Argentina and he ended up speaking with Javier Milei. And Tucker does a good job in the segment that he did setting up the issue at play in this election in Argentina.
We're in downtown Buenos Aires, the capital of Argentina. This was once, about 100 years ago, one of the richest cities in the world. And you could tell as you walk around the faded grandeur of a once great city. But this is now a desperate country. Its economy is in shambles, has been for a long time. Argentina famously defaulted on its debt more than 20 years ago. But now hyperinflation has made this country genuinely desperate. And because of the frustration that has built up among the population, particularly among poor people, a man called Javier Milei is poised to become its next president. He's a former soccer star, a goalie, a performer in a Rolling Stones cover band, and a libertarian economist. He's not a libertarian in the traditional American sense. He wouldn't fit into the Cato Institute, which has attacked him for liking Donald Trump too much. He's a libertarian in the traditional sense. He believes people should have the maximum amount of freedom they can be given. He's gotten from the press in the West, particularly in the United States, the New York Times, the Washington Post, also the Financial Times, has been hostile, to put it mildly. They describe him as a far-right figure, like he's a Nazi.
So Tucker Carlson ends up sitting down with him, and I'll play a clip from that in a moment. But I think when you consider how far Argentina has fallen under these socialist ideals, and, you know, their money is worth nothing. You have so many people in Argentina, I mean, struggling economically at depths we simply do not see in the United States. And so I was just, you know, revisiting that Washington Post headline that, you know, Argentina set for sharp right turn as Trump-like radical wins presidency. It's like they have to vilify him even though things are so bad in Argentina that people voted someone like him in. You know, rather than focusing on that aspect of it, that things are so bad in Argentina, it's a new opportunity for the country, a new chance for them to turn things around. No, they have to vilify him and tie him to Trump, because you just can't have anyone who likes Trump in any way, in any sort of position. So anyway, here's a clip, again, on Tucker's show on X, of Javier Milei talking about how socialism has absolutely destroyed Argentina.
El problema es que Argentina empezó a abrazar las ideas socialistas hace más de 100 años. Argentina empezó a abrazar las ideas del socialismo y con una frase que luce muy atractiva, pero que es terrorífica en términos de funcionamiento del sistema económico, que es la idea que donde hay una necesidad nace un derecho. Y eso es un problema porque las necesidades son infinitas y los derechos alguien los tiene que pagar. Y el problema es que los recursos son finitos. Entonces, frente a la situación de necesidades infinitas y recursos finitos, aparece un conflicto. Ese conflicto lo resolvemos fácilmente, que es con libertad de precios y propiedad privada.
So he's really about, you know, liberating people from the depths of the despair that they're in through economic freedom. You know, he's a libertarian in the sense that he has pledged to really strip the government down to the bare bones and build it back up. I mean, he has this whole long list of government agencies that he's planning to get rid of. I'll also say the guy is fascinating, not only visually, but also I've watched some of his debates in Argentina, and he's just a really interesting character. And as Tucker Carlson said, you know, he used to be a soccer goalie. He's like in a cover band. He looks like, who does he look like, Daryl? With the side, what figure from American history am I thinking of? He's kind of like he's Albert Einstein.
John Adams.
Did John have crazy, you know, I think he might.
He had some mighty mean
lamb
chops.
Yes.
On him, yeah.
He's like a mix between Albert Einstein and John Adams visually.
Yeah, yeah.
The chops, mm-hmm. But he's just kind of like got the crazy hair and the crazy, but he's obviously very intelligent.
Yeah.
I'm like 98% libertarian. And so I love the idea of getting to see in real time how that ideology can fix what's broken economically in Argentina and how more liberty, more freedom he believes is the path to that. And what if it is? I mean, what can you say in 2-3 years if he has substantially improved the outlook of his citizens? And to me, that's a head-to-head comparison of what that those ideals can do. So I wish him all the best. I'm sure he'll continue to be vilified in the media because, he dares to, like Donald Trump. But I think ignoring the media on that and just seeing what he does is probably a sure bet. All right, we got another national story. We are actually going to make this one our segment Unbelievable for today. All right, on a long list of worst ideas I can think of, this from the Seattle Times, California commits to teaching media literacy in public classrooms. Okay. Immediately when I saw that headline, I'm like, I'm highly skeptical. Now, I do believe that it's important for young people to be able to navigate this crazy media ecosystem, to be able to think for themselves, to understand that consuming one single news source is never good, that there are a lot of news sources that are untrustworthy, that are biased, and you need to really, and I don't think it's particularly a bad thing for young people to have those skills, particularly in the social media environment. But let me read from this article for you. Shock of the century, it was introduced by a Democrat. State leaders have a, quote, strong interest, the new legislation says, in ensuring young Californians are equipped to properly confront the misinformation found on digital platforms, as the reach and influence of these platforms are only expected to increase in the future. Quote from the lawmaker who proposed it. As we've seen too often in the last decades, what happens online can have the most terrifying of real-world impacts, from climate denial to vaccine conspiracy theories to the January 6th attack on our nation's capital. The spread of online misinformation has had global and deadly consequences. This reminds me a lot of the truth czar in the Biden administration or in Washington State when they wanted to criminalize election misinformation. You know, at first when I read the headline, I was like, okay, let me just see what kind of classes or lessons that they want to teach to these kids. But then when I see that the person who crafted the bill, wants to protect them against things like vaccine conspiracies, how many conspiracies around the vaccine turned out to be true? I mean, how many? When it came to, hey, this isn't going to be a vaccine that prevents the spread of COVID, and then they fired people over it, and there were some of us like, there's not even enough evidence to show that it's worth firing people over. And then what turned out to be true? So you now have a government run by Democrats. They're going to craft a curriculum for school kids in California to help them navigate disinformation and misinformation on social media. I wonder predominantly what side of the political spectrum most of the misinformation and disinformation that they're going to identify and help kids avoid, what side of the political spectrum is that going to be from? I mean, overwhelmingly, obviously, it's going to be from the right. It's the same thing that we saw from major social media platforms where they suppress speech on the right, where they delete posts or censor posts on the right for things that, I mean, look at the, I always sound like a conspiracist when I say this because it's so ingrained in my head to think that this was a conspiracy for my time in mainstream news. I always think about the Hunter Biden laptop story, how Twitter went to the extent of prohibiting people from even sending a link to the New York Post article on the Hunter Biden laptop story privately. They prevented people from sending it privately to each other, like as a DM on Twitter. And then it turned out that it was true. And then all the other mainstream outlets a couple years later ran with the same story that the New York Post had been censored to that extent for. So no, I don't think that the government, particularly, I don't think one party rule should be instituting media or teaching media literacy in public schools, because we all know what kind of media they're going to teach these young people to avoid. Unbelievable. All right, it is Thanksgiving in 2 days? Tuesday, Wednesday. 3 days. And tell me if this sounds familiar. So for anyone who's struggled with weight issues in their life, you're doing good, doing great, and then you have a holiday or a family gathering or an event like Thanksgiving, You eat too much, and then you're derailed. And then after that, you're like, I give up. I ate too much yesterday. I can't get back on track. And then all that hard work is just for nothing. If that sounds familiar, I have been through that a million times until I discovered the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I lost about 30 pounds in 2 months. I'm down 37 pounds total. I started the program more than a year ago. I've been able to keep it off, and I've been able to enjoy special events. I have every intention of eating possibly my weight in mashed potatoes on Thursday. But the good thing about the program is it factors in that this is a real life, that you can't be on a perpetual diet for 50 years, that there are going to be things come up. There are going to be holidays that come up. There are going to be dinners and occasions and vacations that come up. And the program makes it very easy to stay on track. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no drugs or injections or strenuous workout routines. So do what I've done and what so many other people have done, including a lot of fans of this show. Reach out to Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. Schedule a free virtual 15-minute consultation. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Not only can you do the consultation virtually, you can do the entire program virtually, and there's no reason to wait until after the holidays. Don't, for the millionth time, start your new weight loss journey on January 1st and then watch it get derailed. All right, let's get to questions and comments. Daryl, you want to pop on for questions and comments today? Why not?
Let's do it.
Why not? Anyway, Liz says, if Inslee's so worried about the environment, why is Washington State 7th for the worst air quality in the nation? Oh, I didn't know that. You got to point me to where you found that information, Liz. Sharon Barber says, I seem to think California had a similar repeal the gas tax initiative that failed because of the language. Anyone think that won't happen up here? I'm so glad you brought that up. Because how many times, for instance, have Washington voters said they wanted $30 car tabs?
Yeah.
And how many times have they actually gotten $30 car tabs? They have not.
Have not.
And one of the things that I'm hopeful about, because like Attorney General Bob Ferguson, yeah, it's in my mind that he'll use the power of his office to try to find some sort of legal way around this or whatever, or, you know, help write it in a way that doesn't stand up to constitutional muster. But he's running for governor. Can he really afford to make it look like he's trying to thwart lower gas prices?
Yeah.
So maybe the timing is impeccable for this.
Stars have aligned.
But yeah, I mean, Sharon, I agree. I think voters have said what they wanted and been disappointed enough where I'm sure that there is some cautious optimism. Let me see. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures on water quality. Brandy, are the levels of drugs in the fish at safe levels like on public transportation? Yeah. I mean, we all know, right? Yeah. Just because there's 100% fentanyl in the air samples doesn't mean it's unsafe. For the fish, they could take a little bit of fentanyl.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of meth.
They're suffocating from something else.
Yeah, it's really no big deal. It's definitely not the meth and fentanyl in their system whatsoever. You got to just take a bulldozer to the Snake River dams. It's the only solution. On school safety and the Kia boys, isn't there a shortage of teachers? I understand many of them would prefer to be safe also. I have seen many cite safety as a reason they are quitting as well. And that might be possible. I mean, look, I'm not saying that like school shootings in the traditional sense that we think about them and talk about them on the media aren't an issue. Of course it is. But when you look at, it's the same thing when Democrats in Washington state banned quote unquote semi-automatic assault weapons. They are responsible for such a small fraction of the actual shootings that are happening. And then on top of that, the shootings that, you know, gang members are perpetrating with semi-automatic assault weapons. You mean to tell me that they have not followed the law and they don't know that
they're breaking the law?
Those things are banned? Like, yeah. Oh my gosh. So they're doing all these things that aren't that maybe make good headlines. You know, Bob Ferguson, that's gonna be a huge part of his campaign for governor, is he's, you know, banned all these guns or whatever it is. But then you look at, okay, well, what is that doing? We got record homicide rates.
Yep.
So I thought the goal in banning those was to save lives, and we're not saving lives. So could it be that you did that just because it made a good headline in the Seattle Times? Kathy said, the new Argentinian president reminds me of the Bitcoin guy that was just convicted. Oh my God,
like
they do look a little bit alike.
It's the hair, for sure.
A little older, though, but it's just this very...
I think he also had the lamb chops, too.
No.
The Bitcoin guy, he had sideburns.
Did he have a little sideburn?
I think he had sideburns. Have you seen his court pictures, though?
No, I haven't.
Oh, they made him look like an anime character.
How so?
Chiseled jaw. Very handsome.
Oh, you mean in the paintings?
Yeah, yes. The artwork.
It is always entertaining to watch the interpretations of like the artwork. So in federal court, you can't bring a camera.
Right.
So that used to bother the heck out of us when we were covering federal court cases in Seattle. But there'd always be a lady, I wish I could remember her name, but she'd be in there just doing her little painting. Mm-hmm. And I always thought it was so fascinating. I almost would much rather sit and watch her do it than actually watch the court case. But let me see here. Let me see. Brandy, if we get you 1,000 likes, would you do a day with chops? You mean sideburns? Look, I'm not too proud to admit that I get whiskers and that I got to pluck some of the whiskers out once in a while. So, sorry, I'm looking up comments here. Oh, wow. Is that a new sound effect, Daryl?
Yeah, we've had it for a while.
Oh, we've had it. It just hasn't been used. Jethro says, I want to stay positive about these initiatives and the chances that the voters can reverse some of these policies, but the whole $30 car tabs vote and the state's ability to bypass everything that we voiced in the election just makes it difficult to believe that a vote from the people will result in anything other than more Democratic shenanigans to keep their status quo in place. Still hopeful, though. Oh, you can bet that they will fight tooth and nail. They will look for any sort of avenue, any sort of out. Think about this. Carbon tax, mm-hmm. right? When you think of capital gains tax, yep. if they try to, that's their tax on the rich, which turned out to be a tax on people who are decidedly not rich. When you think about long-term care, I mean, these are their babies. And if you dare put that in the hands of voters, how dare the voters get a say in the things that they have decided are best for us? They're going to lose it. That's actually going to be my sanity check for today, so I won't get too much into that. But they're going to absolutely lose it. Let's do one more. Y says, politicians do not care about so-called issues. Politicians do not care about so-called issues they care about. Inslee does not really care about the environment. If he truly cared about it, he would have done things that would have actually helped. And politicians who keep saying, we care about the safety of minority students, don't really care, because if they did, they would support police and put SROs back in schools.
Yeah. Or they would solve murders.
Does it bother you, Daryl, that when...
Are you asking me as an employee or as a black man?
Yeah. And an employee. Does it bother you when white people talk about racial equity?
Yes, especially when they say it with just like their ideas for it will not create change. There's actually a really good book called Woke Racism.
Oh, okay. I haven't read that.
I'll send it to you. Okay. But it's essentially like, for example, the libs who just live in their little palaces where no crime ever happens, because I'm sure they do in Magnolia or Upper Queen Anne, things are fine over there for now, but like they aren't actually in these communities where people are actually getting hurt and overwhelmingly murders are not getting solved. And they try to create all these policies and all these taxes and they just don't help.
Yeah.
They just don't help.
So, and when they support like police defunding, it's exactly. Yeah, but there's no crime in your neighborhood.
Exactly.
So who is that actually going to hurt?
Literally hurting black people.
Yeah, or when rich people or politicians support police defunding and then they have private security, it's like, oh, you can afford it, but other people cannot. So just fascinating.
I find it offensive and rude.
Rude, offensive. you heard it from Daryl. All right. Good questions and comments today. Thank you per the usual. Let's get to our closing sanity check, which brings us full circle in the episode today. So as we mentioned, tomorrow, Let's Go Washington is going to be handing in signatures. And when they do, and I'll also say that I think there are other initiatives within that six initiative bundle that are also going to reach the signature threshold to be turned in. We need to brace ourselves for what is going to come after that. It is going to be a full out onslaught of fear mongering, of disinformation, of vilification. Not only is Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington going to be personally vilified at every turn, I'm going to be personally vilified at every turn for supporting these initiatives. Those of you who support the initiatives publicly are putting yourself at risk of being personally vilified for trying to advocate for your pocketbook, trying to advocate, daring to advocate for your family. Your job, our job, is to not give a damn. We talk about this all the time on the show, is reasonable people need to feel empowered to speak out for themselves, to speak out for their neighbors and friends and family, and not give a damn about the consequences of doing so. That is when sanity can truly make a comeback. That is when the majority of reasonable, rational people in this state will be able to actually make a difference. And this is going to be a huge test of that. This is going to be a huge test because they will spend so much money, they will spend so much time vilifying every single person and entity who supports any of these initiatives that are aiming to undo some of their key policy. So be prepared for it. Talk yourself up. Like, oh, in the morning, I'm not going to let it bother me today. They're going to call me a transphobe today. They're going to call me right wing today. They're going to call me whatever it is today. And I'm not going to let it bother me today. I have to talk myself up like that a lot because I get attacked online a lot. So I think that is my assignment for all of you to help us continue down the sanity train is as you speak out in support of these initiatives, if you do support them, as you see other people who are being vilified for speaking out in support of these initiatives, have their back, have your own back, and don't let it bother you. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Don't forget to shop our merch store, undividedpod.com. We got stuff selling out left and right, Daryl.
We do.
Red hats, gone.
Live on Instagram.
Oh, right, we got it. Oh, yeah, Daryl, put it up is. Live on Instagram it as is. Well. So make sure if there's items you've wanted from our merch store, you take advantage of it because we are selling out. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We will have shows Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. No show on Thanksgiving, but I will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. In the meantime, if you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, you can support the show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com.
UndividedPod.com.
Good one, Dale. That was nice.
Thank you for tuning in. Have a good day. We'll be right back.